This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
The Seahawks have pulled off one of the league's more understated rebuilding process. I want to kind of state that before we dip into some of the questions about where it goes next. But it's important to note that the San Francisco, 6 years ago, the Seahawks and the 49ers played in the NFC Championship game. In the 6 years since then, Seattle's been back to the Super Bowl and has made the playoffs four times. The San Francisco 49ers are just emerging from what was their deep dive through, well, this is their third coach since then. But in that time, they've accrued incredible talent. Nick Bosa, DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead. All these guys are the result of first-round picks that they got. Solomon Thomas. Basically, you can make the argument that San Francisco's defensive line is one of the single best position groups of any team in the league. It's the result of where they drafted. Seattle has not had those kind of high-end picks. And that question of, okay, how do they get to where now San Francisco is without getting that kind of draft capital is what's facing this team. And I think it's specifically about the defense. Like that's where the personnel deficit is right now. That's the side of the ball that couldn't carry its own weight. They allowed an average of 6 yards per snap. And that, I think that stat more than anything else gives you the best idea of the issue that they face. Every time an opponent snapped a ball, they allowed an average of 6 yards.
And there were a lot of changes this past offseason. There have been changes the last couple of offseasons. Richard Sherman leaves a couple of years ago. Earl Thomas, Justin Maxwell, they leave this offseason. You also trade Frank Clark away. So changes usually mean that there's going to be some bit of a drop-off unless you end up getting lucky in the draft. And guess what? You don't often get lucky in the draft. And with how lucky the Seahawks got earlier last decade, gosh, it's weird to be 2020 right now, they probably are not going to be able to replicate finding gems in the fifth round like they're just readily available all over the place. But when I look at this defense, personnel needs to be better. I wonder about the guys that are coaching the young personnel up. And I wonder if it could help to have a fresh set of eyes, a fresh mind that maybe has familiarity with Pete Carroll's scheme that's somewhere else, or maybe someone that just looks at things in an entirely different way and bringing that guy onto the Seahawks coaching staff. Because when you look at some of the guys that just haven't been able to take steps forward in the last couple of years, I'll specifically just look at the secondary. Lano Hill, Tedrick Thompson, you had a little bit from Trey Flowers at the beginning of this past year. Couldn't you get more? Don't you want to have someone that has Marquise Blair ready to go his rookie season? He's a second-round pick. Don't you want someone that can somehow find a way to harness the unbelievable athleticism that Ugo Amadi has as well so that they can get him on the field and actually trust him out there? It is on players, but it also is on coaching. It is a partnership. It is a team sport, and the team, it also correlates to the coaching side of things. And I do just wonder if maybe they add somebody into the defensive side of things that can also help them get the most, maximize what they currently have on their roster.
What do you want to see more of, or what do you want to see less of? Because I think that that's one of the things that you look at. I think it's easier to tell on offense what you'd like to see more of. There's also the risk, and someone texted in and said, oh, you're putting the onus on changing on the offense, which is already a top 10 unit as opposed to the defense. That makes no sense at all. I'm not sure about that. I think there's an argument to be made that you're better off strengthening your strengths, accentuating your strengths, than you are trying to shore up every little weakness that you have. But the defense is kind of at the point Seattle's running game was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, Seattle's running game was so bad that it weighed everything down. When they crashed and didn't make the playoffs, it's because their running game was god-awful. It was unsustainably bad. That's kind of where we are with their defense right now, right? Like, it's the fatal flaw.
Yes.
What's the fatal flaw in this team? It's their defense. Their defense is allowing an average of 6 yards per game, and you can't rely on them to get stops.
Even if you go and you decide to upgrade your strengths, which is something that Kansas City did this offseason by adding a Mecole Hardman in the first round to their offense, they also completely destroyed their defense. They fired every single member of their defensive coaching staff. They moved on from Justin Houston. They moved on from Eric Berry.
D. Ford.
Right, D. Ford. Like, they cleaned shop entirely. And I'm not saying to do that necessarily either, because I do think that there actually is an interesting element where you could potentially this offseason, as the Seahawks say, oh, you know what, let's add more speed to this offense and see what Russell Wilson can do with it. I think if someone falls to you at the back of the first round, you definitely think long and hard about maybe taking a flyer on some sort of speedy skill player. But at the same time, you look at the defense, and yeah, it's clearly what's holding them back. That's what lost you the game against the Packers. Yeah, the offense took a while to get going, and yeah, maybe the approach could be different. The defense at no point in that game was trustworthy. It wasn't. You had multiple situations for the defense to win you the game, no matter how you feel about the 4th and 11. There was a 3rd and 8, there was a 3rd and 9, and the Seahawks failed on both of those situations. The defense lost you that game. The defense was costing you most of the season. If you look back, you have to wonder if maybe some other outside eyes could have gotten more out of the current group, and if going forward, when you continue to bring in young players, if somebody else can maybe maximize what you're getting. Because there is something to be said about a defensive coaching staff that's been in charge of a defense that has not gotten better over the last 2 years, that has made zero changes in the last 2 years. It has been the exact same.
The point that you made about Kansas City is an interesting one, because you pointed out the significance, the severity of changes that the Chiefs underwent, and a lot of it was personnel. Andy Reid, their coach, is on the offensive side of the ball. Pete Carroll, probably the biggest change in his coaching over the past 20 years, is he's no longer the defensive-minded head coach. He doesn't see himself that way. He sees himself as someone whose fingerprints are on all aspects of how the team plays and prepares. But his expertise, his long-term expertise on the X's and O's side, definitely comes from the defense. And when they made the decision to change coordinators 2 years ago, I kind of assumed, well, that's because Pete knows exactly what he wants or what he needs for his defense, and he's bringing Ken Norton in here because he wants someone who is going to sort of restore the confidence, sort of the swagger, the confidence that defense played with. And now you look at it and you're like, well, okay, it can't be just a matter of attitude at this point. Like, it can't be, because that was the guy that was brought in here to do that. And how you impact or change it, I think, is an interesting question. And I'm not sure. I think it's more likely that they could make some structural changes to the offense than it is they could make some severe changes to the defense, because for better or worse, this is kind of what Pete has had, and this is what Pete has done.
Definitely. I mean, that's going to be hard to change. And forcing change does not necessarily guarantee success. I was pretty skeptical of Kansas City's defense being able to improve itself this offseason, and honestly was skeptical of it, and still am a little bit skeptical of it, even with this win that they just had over Tennessee. That said, they cleaned house. They made a lot of changes. And was the defense a liability in the same degree that it was last year? No. Now, they did have a very easy route in the playoffs. They played the Texans. They played the Titans. When you play the Texans' awful defense, and then Ryan Tannehill at quarterback. So did help a little bit the way that things unfolded for them, with New England losing in week 17 to the Dolphins and all that. But I think that if you are being honest with yourself, to say that this 11-5 football team last year that wins a playoff game, loses a playoff game, doesn't need to make some changes, you're lying to yourself. Because the same old, what does that guarantee you next year in a year where you won two games on missed field goals? And yeah, there were a lot of other close games that you potentially won because of just having that resilience and because of having Russell Wilson. But there are plenty of other games that maybe like a fluke goes against you, a bad call goes against you, like we saw perhaps with the non-pass interference call with that Seahawks 4th and goal or of goal to go situation against the 49ers a little bit ago. They did have the delay of game right before it. That's neither here nor there. Things could have gone differently. You could have been 8-8. You could have been on the outside looking in.
Isn't it almost inevitable that their defense gets better next year? Like, isn't that isn't it almost inevitable? Because there are going to be changes, and there are going to be younger players stepping in there. And I'm not sure if KJ Wright's going to be back. I think that'll be a decision. I don't. I'm almost. I'm almost certain that it's not going to be he and Michael Kendricks. I think L.J. Collier is going to take a step forward. If they lose Jadeveon Clowney, that'll certainly throw any improvement into huge uncertainty. But I think it's almost inevitable that they're going to get better to some degree next season, just because their younger players are going to develop. And one of the strange things that'll come out of this is any reluctance to change and go away from some of the older players will be tempered by, like, what are you afraid? They're going to give up an average of 6.5 yards per play. Like, there's not a lot more for them to go down. Like, I think that we are going to see them get better.
True, but what is the inevitable improvement? Define the inevitable improvement. For L.J. Collier, it should be inevitable that he's a better player next season. But, I mean, he did nothing for you this year. That's why. Because he just did so little for you. I think the degree of that change is very important. Because it does need to be, I think, significant enough where you are taking down a guy like this Aaron Rodgers and the balanced offensive attack that Green Bay now has. Or the same thing with the San Francisco 49ers. You are in a conference now where, yeah, the quarterbacks maybe aren't quite what they used to be. I mean, I think Russell Wilson's definitively the best quarterback in the NFC right now, if you just compare him to the other guys. But you are also in a conference that has balanced offenses that can beat you in a variety of different ways. One team could probably beat you by running the football on you, like the Rams we've seen do. Another team can beat you by throwing on you. And that means that there is improvement that needs to be made across the board. And I don't know, Danny, that the inevitable change is going to be enough. I do agree that, like, the odds of a young defense with this many young players not taking a step forward, that's a very, I think, low probability. But you do want to make sure that you have the proper coaches in place that can make sure that they're taking that step forward. Sometimes things seem inevitable and they just never come to be.
If there's one side of the ball you could get Pete Carroll to loosen his grip on, if there's one side of the ball and that you would say to him of, like, okay, let's try at least just a few things differently, which side would you pick? Because on offense, you have something that is a very well-established template for how he wants to establish the run and how he'd like to play and take when they throw it. He wants them throwing it long. There's a very well-established template for that. On the other side is a defense that it allows players to play fast. And we've seen that when they get great personnel, they are absolute world beaters. That defense from 2012 through 2015 was one of the best that has done it in the NFL, certainly in the salary cap era and maybe ever. It was a great defense. When they get that kind of personnel, that's the results that you can get with that system. We haven't seen the same kind of results. In fact, we've seen it kind of be a liability. Would it be to have him alter and modify some of the things that he does on defense or on offense? If you could loosen his grip on which one side of the ball, which would it be?
Defense. I think sometimes when you have those pelts on the wall, you start to maybe not think that other people could have a different idea that's better than yours. And I would say on that front that Pete could perhaps use some fresh eyeballs and some fresh thoughts on that side. And you know, the way that you just framed that hypothetical is definitely one that should lead an outsider to pick that the offense is what should be changed, right?
That's what I'm choosing.
Right.
That's what
I would choose. I could hear it with the way that you framed it. And I understand that, by the way. But here's the thing. Like, that, if they have healthy running backs against Green Bay, they run for 200 yards. Like, I feel strongly about that. I think the approach, as annoying as it is for many, it would have worked in that game. And with more health, they would have had enough points, I think. But defensively, I think that to continue with the same and to hope that it's the past, we've talked about this before, it isn't 2015 anymore. It's not, this isn't the same personnel. You had all world talent that's never coming back. Like, you want it to be back, but, like, just the idea that you're going to have all of a sudden Cam Chancellor and a Richard Sherman and an Earl Thomas and someone as giant as Brandon Brown are mauling people on the other side, and KJ Wright and all those players, Bobby Wagner, again, Michael Bennett, Cliff Avril,
I don't want 100% of that talent. I just want 60%. I don't want 100%. I just want 60% of that.
Think about all the guys we just listed. 60%, that's a lot. 60% of that is incredible. I mean,
it's only 60%. It's only 60%. I'm not saying they need to get back to 100%. They just need to get back to 60%.
We just mentioned a lot of borderline Hall of Famers.
That question about which side would you like to see him cede a little bit of control or modify more is a really interesting one. You can text in to 710-710. Our playoff coverage here, 710 ESPN Seattle, is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. We're very grateful for them being on board. And right now we're going to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Jess.
Let's go.
Well, in offensive news, outside of Seattle, Browns wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr., he's had core surgery, which I don't remember anyone talking about him needing that, but he had it. Just today, he had to repair a hip and groin injury that apparently he had been hampered by throughout the season.
Did he thank the doctor after the surgery was done? Give him some money?
$100 handshake.
Good job, buddy.
This has been a sticking point, and this is one of the things that Baker Mayfield talked about, that, hey, if we had it to do over again, that probably would have been diagnosed differently. They thought he could play through it in training camp, and he ended up not getting it fixed, and they probably would have had – it probably would have been better had he had the surgery and just come back from it. We'll see. I don't think Cleveland has any choice but to bring him back. I don't know if that's a dude you can win with. In fact, I would say that right now, based on everything I've seen, that's a guy that your best hope with him is to treat him like Terrell Owens was later in his career. Like the
1-year rental type. I feel the same way. I mean, look at this guy. He's a front runner. Period. I mean, how is he going to succeed in a situation where there's possibility for failure? I just can't see it happening. You're going to see this happen every single time when there's bad times. He will not handle them well.
Other injury news. Tevin Coleman diagnosed with a dislocated shoulder after he exited the NFC Championship game on Sunday. There's still a chance he could play in the Super Bowl, though.
That's an ugly injury. That was brutal to watch him. I always get him confused with Tevin Campbell. Tevin Campbell's the little-known R&B singer, but it's Tevin Coleman.
Sing me some Tevin Campbell.
No, God, no. I'm not going to sing. I don't sing. The Tevin Coleman, the thing is with the 49ers, it doesn't matter, man. They got running backs coming out their ears.
It's insane. I mean, it's been interchangeable. Matt Breida or Tevin Coleman or Raheem Mostert, and I imagine they could bring somebody else off the street. And you know what? This speaks to the power of the Mike Shanahan system, because remember back in the day with the Denver Broncos? First it was Terrell Davis, who has a great game in Tokyo on special teams and ends up becoming a Hall of Fame running back, followed by Olandis Gary, Mike Anderson, Ruben Drowens, and other guys who succeeded there as well. You wonder about Clinton Portis. You wonder about Willis McGahee. You wonder about all those guys that have been through that Denver system and that were able to succeed to the degree that they did. And here it is happening again with Kyle Shanahan.
Question.
Yes.
The Seahawks run a version of that same system.
They
do. It's not the same, but it traces back. Its lineage is traced back to Alex Gibbs, who worked with Pete in USC and was actually here for about 5 minutes before Pete Carroll's first season. Shouldn't the running back be replaceable here as well?
Well, I mean,
it has not seemed to be that way.
Chris Carson's been great for you.
Yes, he has. He's been really good.
Rashad Penny finally showed signs that he can be something, but
serious flashes. I like the way Travis Homer looked.
I did as well. With Homer, it seems like there was a little bit more limitations. I think that some would argue, and I would probably make this argument as well, that somewhere down the line, this coaching tree, this specific one, maybe, I don't know, married some questionables.
We're talking about the gene pool's been diluted?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
Lions GM Bob Quinn says he's very comfortable with Matt Stafford potentially returning, but they do pick number 3 in the draft.
Broke his back.
Spinal.
Danny.
Why? I look, Stafford's never taken you anywhere. It's okay to move on. He's had, you know what, for most quarterbacks, he's had a very successful career, but he never took you anywhere. I feel like it's time that Matt Stafford deserves a fresh start elsewhere, and I think that the Lions, it's time to move on. Stafford's not taking you to where you want to go.
Final.
Who'd you draft? Would you draft a quarterback number three overall? If I was in charge of a team, I would have my general rule would be that you really have to sell me on a quarterback taken in the top 10. Like, you've got to convince me that this is the perfect guy at the perfect moment. I think that when you decide and you make a commitment to your franchise without ever having seen the guy on an NFL field, that it's such a risk that I would be predisposed against making that pick.
Joe Burrow is not going to be there. That means that you could be the extremely, extremely chutzpah-laden team that decides to draft Tua Tagovailoa after that hip injury. But at three, you better be right. I'd think about it with Tua. That's how much I like Tua.
I saw a video of Joe Burrow where he was at an LSU basketball game. And he's got a purple jumpsuit on, and he's got a bunch of yellow, gold, and purple beads that he's wearing. He's got sunglasses and a backwards hat, and he's making different signs as he's walking around. I saw that video, and I was like, yuck. I do not want to draft that guy.
He looks a lot like Macaulay Culkin, and that description made him sound like an adult version of Richie Rich.
It really looked like, I was like, that is the big stud on campus, and that sort of stuff is not going to fly in the NFL.
Don't you think, though, that there's part of him that realizes that he just as easily could have been still the backup at Ohio State? There's got to be a little bit of humility to him, but maybe he has embraced this newfound confidence that he honestly deserves after the season he just had at LSU.
Sure, it's awesome for him. I'm just saying, if I'm the NFL team, I'm like, pass. No, thank you. Let somebody else figure out if 1 year, if he's a 24-year-old, final year of college, who just emerged, and now all of a sudden everybody's like, this guy's fantastic. I would not touch that kind of quarterback with a 10-foot pole in the first five.
He's too cool for school.
Yeah. It's also, though, making that hard and fast declaration is going to be easy because it's probably the Bengals that are going to take him, and they'll screw him up even if he was great.
I know. It's so true.
Predicting the Bengals botch a quarterback pick is not a risk at all. That's not a bold statement.
Unlimited Skyline Chili, though.
Didn't he display an insane amount of humility during his Heisman speech?
Yes.
You have to at least take that into account. He just got declared the best college football player in the country.
True. But who has been arrogant during a Heisman speech?
I mean, fair. You prepared.
I kind of want one now that I think about it. It's just an extremely arrogant Heisman
speech.
Someone just
drops the mic.
I'm just better than all you. What?
I will say this. When I watched that video, and it might not mean anything, but I looked at it and I was like, nope. Doesn't matter how he plays football. Like, I don't like that. I think I'd probably be a terrible draft evaluator because it would last like little things like that to completely.
He swaggers too much.
That is annoying and immature. He's like, well, he's in college. Like,
Danny has a no list.
Yeah, I do have a no list. Not that guy.
Finally, the NFL is testing out two potential rule changes in the Pro Bowl, one of which will be an alternate to an onside kick.
I like this. What do you think? The onside kick, some version of the onside kick needs to come back.
It does. But the problem is, this means the end of the kickoff. And I love the kickoff. I miss it. At this point, the kickoff essentially is dead. It's in a coma.
I don't feel like I'm missing that much with the kickoff.
I love returns. All returns, I think, are fun. And I think that kick returns have slowly died. And it's been unfortunate because I think kick returns can be just as effective as punt returns. You don't see them anymore. You really don't. Like, no one even bothers. There's too much of a risk coming out of the end zone and not getting to the 25. I think that if this is something that's enacted in the NFL, you will see the end of kickoffs right afterwards.
I think this idea of this is one of the things that needs to come back. There's a little bit more to kick around. Yesterday, I declared two things that needed to change. It spawned a lot of conversation. The onside kick is one of the things that needs to change. We'll talk about that next on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
So one of the rules they're going to try out in the Pro Bowl, which I'm surprised they don't do this more. The Pro Bowl is a worthless game. There's nothing redeeming about it, watching guys slow dance at the line of scrimmage. However, there are an opportunity to try out different rules, and they're doing something in this game to bring back the theory of the onside kick. It's become, it used to be desperation. It's now almost prohibitively unlikely to return you the ball. So after a team scores on a field goal or a touchdown, it gets a choice. It can give the opposing team the ball first and 10 at its own 25, or it can go for it fourth and 15 at its own 25. So you're deep in your own territory. You've got one play to make 15 yards, and if you get it, well, you get the ball there. You get the ball at wherever you land off, and you get a new series of downs, and it's your ball, your possession. I love the idea of bringing back the onside kick, or at least the possibility of getting the ball back after a touchdown. I think you need it for games.
And to your point, the way you've laid it out, you're 100% right in that this actually gives teams the opportunity to convert on one of these. Because I think the only team that was actually remotely competent at onside kicks this past season was, surprisingly, the Miami Dolphins, who had a couple of them called back for very, I thought, BS reasons, like specifically against the Dallas Cowboys, where they actually successfully pulled it off, and there would be an offsides call, and I was like, okay, that's, I don't know about that. But there are very few teams that actually can figure it out now that there's, you have to have five guys on both sides of the ball. And if you are going to make it so that a team has the possibility of getting the ball again, then this is a way to go about it. But here's the other problem, Danny. This also continues to further the gap between the teams with quarterbacks and the teams that don't have quarterbacks. A team with a quarterback, you know, for all those people that were saying, hey, go for it on that 4th and 11 against the Packers, Russell Wilson's one of like a few quarterbacks in the game where you actually think that's even a remote possibility that he would actually be able to pull it off. And I think it definitely gives some teams the ability to convert on these, but I don't think it's many.
You get a 15 to 20% chance. I think that's what you look for in an onside kick, right? Like to say, like that's the odds, and then the punishment, the downside of not getting it, your opponent gets it and they're already in field goal range. I think the math's about right on this one. 4th and 15 from your own 25 that you do. No matter what the likelihood is, the downside of it is pretty significant, pretty severe. I like trying that. I don't have a problem with the kickoff being phased out of football. I don't. It's not one of the things. If I was going to list my 10 concerns about the way football is played, the kickoff going away doesn't crack my top 10. But this step is another one in the direction of eliminating the kickoff entirely.
If you eliminate the kickoff, you eliminate jobs, you eliminate special team players.
Well, you don't eliminate jobs because you're not going to have fewer. You eliminate a role. Like there's a role for a pretty exciting player who's a kickoff returner. Someone like who, DeAnthony Thomas is probably one of the few remaining guys that you would identify Black Mamba as a kickoff return specialist, right?
I didn't know that was his nickname. It's weird now. Like I off the top of my head, I really can't think of legitimately good kickoff returners. And to be perfectly honest, now that we're seeing so many of these dominant skill players that return punts for a little bit, like Tyreek Hill, they don't do it anymore. We've seen Tyler Lockett sort of phased out of it this year. He came back to do it again. There's been a lot of change at that position. Who's the guy on the New Orleans Saints? He's really good. I forget his name, which honestly goes to show you the way that return position has been going. You do perhaps limit some jobs, though, for some of the other guys that are on the kick return team, that are on the punt team. Well, not on the punt team, but on the kick return team, on the kickoff teams. I suppose
the job still exists. It just goes to someone else. Like the job, you're not going to have fewer roster spots.
No, I agree. You're on the field less. There's less of a chance for you to make yourself stand out. I suppose. And really, I'm sort of just digging for any arguments against it. The bottom line is that the NFL does now care a little bit more about player safety, and as much as I want to deny it, the kickoffs are a dangerous play with wedges, with some of the things that the NFL has gone out of its way to outlaw, and now it has really just become essentially a time to get up and go to the bathroom. Like, how often has a kickoff been returned out of the end zone outside of maybe in a preseason game where a young player who's desperate to make a roster spot will do it?
Given the choice between kickoffs as they currently exist,
mm-hmm,
and no kickoffs, which would you choose? Because I would agree with you. How they used to be, probably more exciting than what we have
way
now.
More exciting, especially with like, onside kicks.
If you give me the choice, and I there's part of me that wants to say you should still be able to do onside kicks, and you just declare that, okay, this is an onside kick, and all of a sudden you can have an unbalanced line. You can try for all of the rule goes to its old form. You know that teams would then try to use that to kick it. How far further down the field can you be prohibited from kicking it? I get why it's simpler just to eliminate that possibility altogether. I would say that of all the different impacts that the kickoff rule has had, the elimination of the onside kick has probably been the one that's affected me the most, or the one that I've said, like, man, I still wish you had that possibility. I wish that it wasn't a three-quarter court overhead, like one-handed baseball pass of a basketball shot. I wish it was more like a half-court heave where it's not a good chance, but, man, you got to look and you're open. And, well, if it comes down to it, I'll watch. I want to watch that person take that half-court heave to see if they can make it.
Yeah, I miss it. And I also miss kick returns happening. I really do. Maybe this is a little bit of the high school football player in me glory-dazing and reminiscing on days past, but I liked kick returns. It was something that I enjoyed specifically doing, and it's just gone. So that part I legitimately do miss. It was a very exciting play, and also the onside kick too. And it's something you're entirely removing. And I do think that changing it to what you suggested, Danny, is the only approach you can really do to make the game continue to be competitive in those situations. But I do think that it's going to really help out those teams that have quarterbacks and continue to further the gap between teams that do and don't.
Well, yeah, you either got a quarterback or you don't.
Yeah.
And yeah, you don't have one.
Now it's that much worse.
What change would you like to see? Yesterday I said it was,
oh, yeah,
we get to watch the instant replay reviews. Like, no more going to commercial on that. The other one that I would change is the invisible plane with just putting the ball, the nose of it over the, no, you have to touch down in the end zone. To score a touchdown, you actually have to touch down. I give you a magic wand, one rule to change. What do you change?
I'm going to repeal the 5-yard contact rule, and to celebrate it, I am going to hold a drill. It's a festival where receivers, prospective receivers in the eyes of Bill Polian, get to run routes against Bill Polian and perhaps to shake him off. I just hate the 5-yard contact rule. I think ever since it was put in place by Bill Polian's whiny little Colts who couldn't get off jams against the Patriots' defensive backs, I think it has drastically changed the game for the worse. It is now in a spot where you're seeing quarterbacks consistently throw for 4,000 to 5,000 yards with ease, and defensive players are constantly, essentially, on the attack. What is wrong with pushing a wide receiver downfield a little bit before a ball is thrown his way? The answer is nothing. That's how the game was always played, and do we really need offense that much that we need to make it incredibly easy for a wide receiver who has every advantage already to get that extra advantage? The 5-yard contact rule was terrible, and honestly, I think it makes us appreciate quarterbacks of yesteryear less than we should, because those guys had it way more difficult than the guys have it today.
I like this idea. You would have been in support of the Bad Boys Piston era, foul everybody defense, hand-checking galore.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Listen, and you know what? Most of my rule changes are somewhat barbaric. Maybe Dave Wyman would appreciate them. Like, I think significantly less emphasis on roughing the passer. I hate that quarterbacks and running backs can give themselves up, especially in the case of quarterbacks. Like, Patrick Mahomes running for that touchdown. Let's be honest for a second, Danny. If we were in an NFL where a guy tightroping the sideline wasn't such a, like, oh, well, if you push the quarterback too hard on the sideline, God forbid he falls hard. Like, that's where we are now. And Mahomes being in that spot, I think it bamboozled the Titans. And then all of a sudden, he's in front of the goal line, and no one has any idea how to tackle a quarterback anymore. I hate that quarterbacks can give themselves up. I hate that running backs and receivers can do it too. I understand it's like all for player safety and all of that, but it's just like uncompetitive and unmanly.
I like this idea. I had very clearly the vision in my head of a quarterback running downfield. We all see, oh, baseball slide's coming. If he couldn't do that, he just has to take the lick.
Yeah, why not?
if he just has to take the lick that's coming to him.
Exactly. I mean, that's honestly, because the worst part about it is these guys can slide and they get like an extra yard and a half by sliding.
No, as soon as they touch down, the ball is down. Like, you can't tell them, like, you have to take this
hit. But here's the thing. Like, now, if you're really smart, you could go on like a running slide, and you could run as fast as you possibly can and launch, and you could easily get like 5 yards if you slide like a crazy person.
I like this. No, none of that's happening. The question is, should you be able to opt out of a hit?
No.
Should you be able to gain yardage and then opt out of a hit and say, okay, that's all done? Should you be able to opt out of a hit?
And this once again goes back to teams in the early 2000s that I thought were soft. The Indianapolis Colts and the St. Louis Rams. I hated that they could both get away with that, where you could catch a pass, your Torrey Holt, your Isaac Bruce, your Marvin Harrison, your Reggie Wayne. You can just drop to the ground in the fetal position. No, that's bogus. You should actually have to go fight for yardage, and you should be able to be brought down.
It's Danny and Gallant. We'll get back to more Paul's rules for football barbarism. No, actually, we're going to throw flags, which is something that Paul should have administered to him right now. So we'll do it next.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
We now interrupt the implementation of old school medieval style football at the behest of your ruler, Paul Gallant, to look at exactly what has happened over the previous 3 hours and who needs to be held accountable. That's right, flag on the play. Put our heads together. We come up with any things that need to be challenged, reviewed, or penalized. And let's start with you, Paul. Who's your flag going to this fine day?
Well, I don't know if Danny's caught me being vain, as I typically am in the break. Sometimes Danny will catch me using my camera to like examine my face and just the way I look. I was looking at myself in the mirror on my phone, and I'm really self-conscious because Brock Heward rattled me earlier today. Brock Heward rattled me by describing my beard as getting Aaron Rodgers-esque. I don't know if I can throw a flag on Brock because, you know, the beard is in the eye of the beholder and perhaps not the man who possesses it. But if I look like Aaron Rodgers right now, I mean, it might be time. It's been a nice 2 years. It might be time to shave the beard. And I'm wondering why it looks like this. So right now I'm throwing a flag on myself. How has it gotten to this point where I look like a haggard has-been quarterback?
Wait. Brock can have a little say in that. He's got, you know, that's the body image show.
Yeah,
so
he is. He's focused on how you look. You're just lucky he's not talking about your gut.
I'd love to be on the body image show as someone who is exceptionally vain and yet at the same time extremely hard on himself. And I don't want to look like I've got an Aaron Rodgers beard. I'm sorry.
What's wrong with Rodgers' beard? I assume that most beards are basically equal. Like, what distinguishes a beard from being a good beard or a bad beard? It's just hair on your face.
The fullness, I suppose. I don't know.
Those calves. Mm. Those hips.
Heward Body Show.
This is reminding me of my very skinny calves, very skinny forearms.
Oh,
my Irish
don't wear
ancestry.
Shorts around Brock. Don't wear shorts around Brock.
True. Yeah, he will examine your calves for evidence of citrus.
You can't do anything about it.
I think that the levelness, the even distribution of hair on your face is a way to judge a beard.
Okay, yeah.
I think you have pretty good distribution.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But
there's no patchiness.
Why am I being compared to Aaron Rodgers?
What's wrong with Rodgers' beard? It seems pretty normal. He's got some gray hairs in there. I appreciate the fact he's not dying them.
I do have gray hairs in mine as well. I just don't want to look like Aaron Rodgers.
I mean, if you Google image him, his beard isn't bad. I mean, you cannot like him, but his beard is fine.
I'm just throwing the flag at myself. I look too much like an Aaron Rodgers.
Do it.
What do you do with your gray hairs?
So some of them. So here's the thing. Like the my dad and my sister will make me very self-conscious sometimes about my appearance, inadvertently, I think. But my sister loves to point out that I have gray hairs in my beard from time to time. So what I do is I get tweezers and I pluck them. And it is very painful. And sometimes it is very difficult to actually grasp the gray hair out of the beard. It's very difficult.
That's some wiry hair there.
Oh, yeah. It's strong, too. This stuff's thick. you try to grab one hair, you end up grabbing like five other ones.
Jess,
yes.
Who's your flag go to?
Man, now I got to raise one now. I got to even this out a little bit. Well, I've got two quick ones. Raise a flag for Shaq Griffin, first Pro Bowl. I'm very
good
happy
for
him. But also raise a flag for Felix. I really hope that whatever he has in his next era of his life, career, whatever, that he finds success and happiness. Obviously, there was some disappointment towards the end of his time here as a Mariner. He spent his entire career with this organization and heading all the way to, over to Atlanta, which is almost as far away as you can get in the baseball world in the United States. Maybe he'll have another chance, and I would like to see that.
That's great. I agree. I think I have no hard feelings. I wish him nothing but the best, and if he succeeds, I'm going to be nothing but happy for him.
Yeah, best of luck, man.
Lydia?
There's been enough hair shame on the show today, so I'm raising a flag for Russell Wilson's man bun because
no.
You know what, Russ? You do you, my friend. You know? You do you. Whatever you want. As someone who's had a bowl cut, as someone who attempted to dye my hair black and turned it purple at one time in my life, you know what? Just you, do whatever you want.
I like it.
I support it.
Yeah.
Ooh, recover. Another fellowing recovering gross. Team bowl cut person. I appreciate this. Some people can pull it off. Some people can't. I do think that Russ.
No
can
one
pull
can
off.
Pull off a man.
I think Russ can pull it off.
But when did he? When did his hair grow that much?
I know.
It's been like a week since we've seen him.
He was rocking the curls all year.
It's been long.
Maybe it's just straight. Maybe that's how he got it up into the man bun. You can't tell how long it is when it's curly.
My flag is going to be raised for Dave Wyman, whom I miss dearly because of his the specific tinge of dismissiveness with which he pronounces my first name. I really earnestly miss it because it's when I say that I know that I've broken through the crusty exterior and forced him to actually waste his time by considering my own negligible point of view. When he says my first name with this has been brought to my...
You know, maybe they should pass more on first down and everything.
Let me hear it again.
I've heard Danny say...
He might as well say Nat. I heard a Nat say. I'm raising a flag. Dave's my older brother, whom I love and miss dearly. That's going to do it for us. I want to thank Trey Wingo for joining us and trying to give us provide a dose of perspective to the rabble rousers that we are. Jessamine and Lydia, who are they are twin bright spots from the production booth. And he's Paul Gallant, and he wants to see more quarterbacks get hit in their head.
Crush your enemies and see them driven before you. He is Danny O'Neill, my non-barbaric older brother. So long, farewell, until we meet again.
It was just so much fun.